And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, and coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Here's a shout out to the Faddle family, all of them, as many arms as they may have. I hope everybody's feeling good wherever you are. It's raining here, but it's warmish, and we're a happy group here in Astoria, Oregon, because the Fisher Poets have descended upon us, and we love it. And not to be outdone, the Seaside folks are happy because the Jazz folks have descended upon them, and Cannon Beach is right up there with the Yoga Festival. So if you're anywhere near the north coast of Oregon, you definitely want to come on over and check out all the wonderful things going on. I've got a full Fisher Poets show today, and this is Arts Live and Local. Carol, your host. Want to play you a little bit of music to start out from the Uptown Lowdown Boys, to remind you of the Seaside Jazz Festival. It is happening, and it goes on today, all day tomorrow, and Sunday as well. And that is, it actually started last night. And it's if you head over to the Seaside Convention Center, it's happening in five venues, three of which are in the Convention Center. Apropos of the music played, I just want to let my Nova Scotia folks know that the folk show this morning, which was fabulous, with all kinds of Fisher Poets again, Mary Garvey and John Palmas and John Van Am, singing and talking. But the show opened with a Nova Scotia song. So it's all about you. And right now, let's listen to the Uptown Lowdown Boys. Stay tuned and be prepared to have a good time. Thanks for being here, folks. We'll be right back. Well, the name of this is, allegedly, since my best gal turned me down. But I don't think that's about to happen. You just have to pick the right gal or guy, and they won't turn you down because life is too good to be negative. Is that a philosophy of life or what? Well, folks, here's a philosophy of life for you. Do what you love and do it well. And my first guest is the perfect example of that. Corey Arnold is here. Corey, I believe, is from Portland. Is that right?
I live there now, yeah.
Where are you from?
I grew up in Southern California, of all places, a little suburban town.
That is amazing, considering what you've done with your life, which is very exciting. It seems, I'm going to say it, and then you can auto-correct or other-correct or something. Corey started early with both photography and fishing, and he has taken his skills to a very high level in both areas. He's here today because he's got a show up at Imogen Gallery in Astoria, part of the Fisher Poets Gathering. As a matter of fact, it sort of kicks it off because there's a reception from 4 to 7 today. And Imogen is right on the corner of 11th and Marine Drive. The show has been up, and it's a gorgeous show. Everybody can make your way over there. If you don't make it today, you can get there. It's up through March 8th, but it's really fun today because you'll get to meet Corey. The name of the show is Fish Work, Commercial Fishing Throughout the World. He also is a skipper of a boat and has been for 7 years. A boat, is that the right term? Not ship.
Oh, it's a skiff. I'm a set netter in Bristol Bay, so it's hard to know. Do I captain a skiff? Can you actually captain a skiff? I don't know.
Well, you can do whatever you want for me because I don't know any better. So, but many of our listeners do, so you got to get it right. So, Corey, how did this happen that you sort of worked your way in both worlds? How did that come about?
Well, my dad was... he was an avocado farmer, so I kind of had this farming background, even though I lived in a little suburban town in California called Vista. And on the weekends, we would head out in a little 21-foot fiberglass boat and go sport fishing. So he was completely obsessed with fishing and got me into it when I was... I have pictures of me holding my first fish when I'm wearing diapers and sunglasses on
no
the
way.
Dock. Yeah, it was like a little... shark in the harbor, you know. So I got hooked really young.
Sweet.
My dad also just meticulously photographed our catch. So he was kind of obsessed with photography in kind of an amateurish way. But I have this whole history of me growing up holding fish. So so I guess both those things really inspired me.
I love it. So. Was your father a photographer or just a snapshotter?
He was like an amateur photographer, but he got a little obsessed with it, but he really didn't have time. He was pretty busy working with the avocados and stuff. So,
And you ended up actually studying art and specifically photography?
Yeah. Well, when I was 19, I took off for Alaska with a friend, you know, heard about how you could make money in the fishing industry. It was after my first year in college where I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was thinking about doing photography, but I kind of, I started commercial fishing in the summers and, I ended up eventually going to, art school, the Academy of Art in San Francisco and majoring in photography. And, meanwhile, every summer I would, set net in Bristol Bay or Cook Inlet.
This seems to be quite a regular pattern actually for people who, teach school or have, quote, normal jobs during the year and then head up to Alaska during the summer. And some people seem, it feels almost like an obsession, as though life would not be full without that time on the water. Is that?
Yeah, I think the longer you do it and the more you become involved in a community, and fishing starts to become a identity in a way. And you know, after I was in graduated from school, and I was living in San Francisco at the time, the .com crash happened, and suddenly I was out of work and photography assisting and stuff. So I shot back up to Alaska and found myself a winter crabbing job, and made my living off of that for a while.
Had you actually figured that out in advance, that it would be a good fallback, or it just, you did both of them for love and it turned out to be a good fallback?
Yeah, I think once I started fishing in the summer, you know, I got really obsessed with those summertime trips to Bristol Bay, and I wanted to go the rest of the year, but I was I couldn't because I was in school. So as soon as I was out of school, I just kind of hightailed it up there and got kind of hooked on the adventure and the, you know, it's totally otherworldly experience up showing up in the Aleutians after growing up in a little, you know, suburban Southern California. It's
absolutely
a whole other animal.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the word community also. Is that part of it too when you get up there? There's a kind of like what's going on this weekend in Astoria.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like a reunion of different people I've met in different places. Now photography takes me to a lot of fishing communities all over Alaska and in Europe, because I get hired by magazines and environmental companies and fishing companies to document commercial fishing culture. So it's taken me all over, and so I feel like really tied into the community.
So are you fishing anymore at all?
Yeah.
Do you have time for that?
Yeah, well, Bristol Bay, my Bristol Bay SatNet operation is sort of,
oh, that's right,
I bought a permit.
Skiffing.
Yeah, skiffing. I bought a permit 7 years ago and just been kind of growing that business. And
What is a skiff? Okay, I'll pretend I know, but I'm doing it for my audience. But actually, what does it mean?
Well, a skiff is, it's basically like a glorified rowboat, 22 foot big, not big, but it's an open aluminum boat. So there's no cabin, and it's got an outboard motor. So
so it's day fishing only.
Yeah, it's day fishing. So set netting, you live in shacks on the shore, basically. In my case, we live in an abandoned cannery called Graveyard Point. It's a community of about 130 fishermen, kind of took over all these abandoned buildings. We have rainwater collection and solar panels and stuff like that. So we live on shore and we go out and we fish with the tides about twice a day.
And does this community shift? In other words, you all know each other, or every year there's a new group of folks coming in, or what?
That's
a lot of people.
Yeah, we all know each other. The amazing thing about this place is there's so many people from all different religions, different sort of classes, different races, different parts of the country. It's just a melting pot of people colliding there. So,
do you ever end up shooting people? Photographing people as well, or you stick to the.
Yeah, no, I like my Graveyard Point series is really focused on the interesting characters and clashing with nature, you know. There's
I saw the one picture of a guy, of someone, I don't know if it's a male or a female, dragging the net, which looks arduous, but
yeah, that's actually Billy Delaney, another Fisher poet. She's not here this year, but she worked with me for 3 years, and set netting can be really grueling. Everything's by hand. We don't have any hydraulics or anything. So, yeah, we'll be dragging a gill net up the beach, setting it in the mud, and then when the tide comes in, the fish come in with the tide, and then we pick the fish out from the skiff.
And people love it and go back year after year after year. Okay, so now let's come to what you've got here. I was amazed when I saw the photographs. They're gorgeous. There's one of them in particular I mentioned to you that it doesn't look real, basically. It's an eagle on a cleat. Tell us about that. How do you get it? It's very close up. You're right there.
Yeah, well, in
you have a telephoto lens, I'm sure, but still.
Well, actually, that's a wide-angle lens. I was crawling on my hands and knees up to this bald eagle that was sitting on a cleat eating a pollock he grabbed out of a net. And this is in Dutch Harbor, where there's so many eagles, they call them the Dutch Harbor pigeons. And their heads are often dirty and oily because they've been digging in the trash. And a trawler will come in and have a few pollock left over in its net, and it'll get swarmed, and suddenly there's 50 eagles, you know, on the net. And so I've been kind of obsessed with that scene and photographing it. And they've become so accustomed to humans that you can literally get right up next to them.
Because it's stunning photograph. I could never get near that close even. But okay.
Well, he was screeching at me and eating this pollock and staring at me, and I kept seeing him blink. So a lot of people think he's blind in the photo, but I kept hitting the motor drive, you know, right when I thought he was going to blink, and I finally captured him blinking. So it's kind of a freakish looking scenario.
Definitely. And you do travel. This Northern European, Bristol Bay, the Bering Sea, the show that we see up right now, is that from all over or what?
Yeah, so my the kind of blanket title of my fishing work is called Fish Work. I've decided when I started crabbing that I was going to start photographing commercial fishing and cruise around the world for the rest of my life. I'd go at least one different destination a year and sort of chronicle what's happening in the world of commercial fishing, because it's always changing. So this particular series is a little excerpt of some of the more recent seascapes, like strange landscapes you find in fishing communities, like piles of nets and things, some of the wildlife and a little bit of the creatures we pull up and some of the oddities.
So I'm assuming that since you are an insider, you have an advantage. Number one, you know what you're looking at, and you may even know what you're looking for. And number two, you can communicate with people. What about the actual verbal language? Any problems there when you're traveling?
Oh, you mean with different
talking
countries?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got commissioned by the Pew Foundation to photograph in 8 countries in Europe back in 2010. Mm. And they hired me because I knew fishing culture, and they didn't actually have many connections. So I just would show up in these towns and some places in France and Spain, you know, no one spoke English, and I would sort of find someone to help me a little, and then I would end up on a boat where no one spoke a word of English sometimes. And so,
is that good sometimes?
It wasn't too bad in that case, because sometimes I could just be a fly on the wall and they just start ignoring me.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. They can't talk to you or you can't understand them. So they just go, what the heck? And then you get to shoot everything you want.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So the show is up at Imogen, as I mentioned. There is a reception today from 4 to 7. And then it'll be tomorrow and Sunday, and then up through March 8th. But also, and it'll be open from 11 to 5, I understand, Friday and Saturday, and 11 to 4 Sunday. But you're doing something else while you're in town, projecting images somewhere on a wall on Marine Drive between 11th and 12th. So as you said, if you're sitting at the Columbian or the Wet Dog, which are both parts of the Fisher Poets Gathering, and looking across the street, what are we going to see?
Yeah, it's from the Voodoo Lounge, I think, right?
Voodoo Room.
Yeah, Voodoo Room, yeah. And right around the corner from Imogen. Basically, I've never done this before, but I've been shooting all this sort of stock video footage on all my journeys, and I've been starting to compile it together into kind of odd little short films, and I've linked them all together and made a little program. So it's going to be a massive silent film rolling on the side of the building downtown. So I'll be projecting from a truck in the parking lot.
Okay. So this is in the evening after dark, so it shows up?
I'm going to try to get it going right after the opening or just before the opening is finished tonight, around 7 or so.
Okay.
And it should be going as long as it...
Tonight?
Tonight, as long as people are around, and then I'll put it back on tomorrow.
Okay, you will. So, tomorrow night. So check that out, folks. I mean, it's something that you could walk right by if you don't know to look at. So this is, I love it. Again, a little secret gift. You also have been involved, and I don't see how one can't be if one is involved in the fishing area, in some of the political issues that go on, Pebble Mine, Bristol Bay. Does that give you some photographic material as well?
Yeah, well, I've been trying, whenever I can, I'll use my photos to help spread the word about the threats of Pebble Mine. Now we got all these mines in Canada that are threatening the American, rivers and the American fisheries downstream. So I'm going to be hopefully working more with that issue as well. But anytime I can use my photos to tell a story and try to reach out to a wider audience about all these threats to fishing from large-scale mining and oil industry and extraction and whatnot, and then
great,
all for it.
Corey, it is a delight to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in. I'm going to show up at that reception, even though I've seen the pictures once. One can see them over and over. The body of work is called Fish Work, Commercial Fishing Throughout the World, but that doesn't even tell half of it. So check it out. Meet Corey. And I don't know when he is in Portland, but he's got a place to live in Portland when he's not traveling the world and photographing and fishing. Thanks so much for coming in, Corey Arnold.
Thanks so much, Carol. It's really
okay.
Nice.
Do you have a website, by the way, where people...
Oh, yeah. It's www.coreyfishes.com. That's Corey. Fishes.com.
Good.
You can see more of the work.
Okay, great. That's good for all those folks who aren't close by. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. Coming up next, I've got some music for you from John and Jay. That'd be John Broderick and Jay Speakman, who John's one of the movers and shakers who got this whole thing started. There were several others. We heard from John Van Am this morning. Some great stories. There's so many stories. Come on by and listen in. Thanks for being here, folks. KMUN, KTCB.
dungeon down below. Looking for a chic bistro where you can take your friends down there. I know we'll go to Chez Pierre. Here's a waitress to your table side. Slender, lovely, clear, blue-eyed. You're a long way now from the shagak. Enjoy it, cause you won't be back. Her lips are glossed to velvet black, pants tight. You ask her what the special is tonight. Pacific salmon, well, you're not charmed. Ask, is it wild or is it farmed? She knows the very word you want to hear. She nearly whispers it in your ear. Wild, her answer tries to mesmerize. Something tells you that she lies. Wild, so it's Alaskan. Where's the chef? Why don't we ask him? Was it Guild or Sanderhook? Is it Coho or Chinook? Through the kitchen swinging door she slips, her four-star apron tied around her hips. Among the pandas and the potted ferns, awkwardly you wait till she returns.
Well, that's our good buddies, Jay Speakman and John Broderick, A Good Trip After All, with a couple of their tunes, and starting out with one. I just love that juice harp that Jay plays, the 50 HP Merc. I don't know what that refers to. And A Fisherman Eats Out. They are full of humor and good music, and they will be around and about. They also both live locally. So, for example, last week, if you were in the neighborhood, you had the opportunity to hear them playing right here in town, the Winecraft. So stay tuned. Fisher Poets are in the neighborhood. This next guest, however, is not a fisherman. Let's see, how can we stretch that definition? I'm not sure. He's a protector of fish and all things related to the river, and that would be my good friend Brett Vanderhoevel, who is the executive director of Columbia River Keeper. And everybody who lives around here knows about Columbia River Keeper because that's the organization that came in 2005 to support the movement in our communities to protect the Columbia River from lots of things, including fossil fuels. So this year at Fisher Poets, welcome Brett.
Hi, Carol. Thank you.
Great to have you here. And you are going to be giving of two presentations, is that right? Or one presentation and one party, let's put
Yeah, we have... We have three things going on. With okay. Our staff from Riverkeeper has come down to Astoria, along with many friends and members here in the estuary. And we have I'm doing a presentation at 10 o'clock tomorrow at the Maritime Museum called Protecting Columbia from Fossil Fuel Export, where we're going to talk about some of the coal and oil and liquefied natural gas projects. And then we're having a reception at CALA, where it's just pop in and get to talk to some old friends and meet some new people and listen and learn about some of the issues in the estuary. And then we're doing a hike Sunday morning out at the LNG, the proposed LNG terminal site in Warrenton.
Oh, and it's a perfect day. I did that hike one day when it was pouring rain. This weekend it's supposed to drizzle, but not. But it's a good time to get out there to realize what is this nature really about out here. So,
yeah.
I believe, the CALA gathering is from 3 to 4:30 on Saturday. And right before you, there was someone on the air this morning with John Van Am. I didn't catch her name, but she is going to be presenting at CALA. So wherever you go in this town, there is good stuff happening. So it would be, you could spend the entire day just at one of the venues. I'll be at Gala that afternoon and that evening helping out. So, well, you work with a lot of different groups, but I just wanted to get a quick background on you, Brett. How long have you been with CRK?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
And how long have you been the director?
Oh, about 7 or 8 years. So I started out as our staff attorney and still do quite a bit of legal work, but also a bunch more. So we have this great staff of scientists and lawyers and community organizers. So I get the great pleasure working with doing a bunch of different things.
And does the organization is centered in, is it Hood River?
Yeah, our main office is in Hood River. We have an office in Portland. And
do you have people running up and down the river all along, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we work along the entire Columbia. So as much as I would love to be down here in Astoria all the time, you know, Hood River's a little more centrally located. Certainly not central on the Columbia, but, you know, a little further upstream. And we have our, you know, organizers are out working in a lot of communities. We have a volunteer Adopt a River program that's, you know, all up and down the Columbia. And we have program areas in different regions. And, you know, a lot of what we do is advocating to protect the river. So some of that is, you know, boring things like reviewing documents and keeping track of projects. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a lot of time in front of the computer. But we definitely get out on the water as much as we can and are definitely in, you know, in different river communities every night.
Yeah, the hands, instead of being hands-on, it's hands and feet in the water. The whole body's in the water. You've got all kinds of folks doing stuff. So, and it relates so strongly to this gathering because part of what this is about is the life in the water, the rivers and the oceans all over the world. But obviously, we're focused right here, so it's a perfect match. I do want to mention, and then I want to talk about other things just as long as I'm giving a very slight bio of Brett. A very exciting thing did just happen, and that is that the Oregon State Bar honored Brett VandenHeuvel, my guest, who is the Columbia River Keepers Executive Director, with the Environmental and Natural Resources Leadership and Service Award. It's pretty amazing because he was selected from among 460 statewide members. And it's not every day, I'm going to quote Lauren, it's not every day that attorneys who represent polluters, logging companies, and big ag, and some public interest attorneys, bestow the award on an environmental advocate. So it's in addition to your being a brilliant lawyer, which we have seen over and over right here in Astoria and Clatskanie and this whole community. It's also your ability to just stay with the task and lead us and take care of us and bring us all together. I mean, we have a good time. We like the
right
folks at Columbia River Keeper. This is not your ordinary organization. So I want to congratulate you and thank you for all the work. And there are a few people who are part of this festival, again, who you work with in different ways. You work with fishermen. You work with tribal folks. How does that compute?
Yeah, so our goal is pretty simple, is to fight for clean water. And a lot of the fishermen and women are some of the most important voices out there for clean water. You know, the people that are out on the water every day and the people that are depending on it for their livelihood are the first to stand up to protect it. So we have the, you know, great pleasure of working with people in all different parts of the fishing industry, from, you know, commercial fishermen to tribal and recreational. And particularly, I know there's some at Edmo is here. He's he grew up at Celilo, near the Dalles, Oregon, where the Great Celilo Falls was drowned, you know, almost 60 years ago. Yeah. And he's an incredible poet and playwright, and it's really exciting to see Ed. He's a longtime friend and has done a lot of events for us. So if you get a chance to check him out this weekend.
He's also a terrific father, I would have to say, because his daughter came out one time and right here again in Astoria for Spirit of the River and gave us a wonderful presentation. And I think she had her little one with her. So it's like generational people who feel passionate about the river and work together. So
yeah, Ed's daughter, Siadam Edmo. Actually, Ed did a tour of us of the She Who Watches pictograph, which is in out by Horseleaf Lake and in the gorge in Washington. And Ed and his granddaughter Siali, she came along on this tour, and he's taught his traditional storytelling and poems to his daughter and now his granddaughter. So
great.
It's pretty neat to see. And that's not just a Native American, you know, thing of passing down these stories. That's one of the great things I love about Fisher Poets Gathering is the stories telling and people learning from each other and learning about this world.
Yeah. And my last guest, Corey Arnold, used the word community. It popped up there when he was talking about up in Alaska. And right here in this weekend, we have that community comes together, and it's very exciting to see the sparks go on. I met Edmo many years ago through the Arts and Education program. He's a fabulous storyteller and funny, as well as passionate and serious. He's also very knows how to present things in a way to make them accessible. So, yeah, I don't know when he's... You got to get a schedule, folks, so look it up online or check out the Close Weekend. So, and then you also have a relationship with one of our local Fisher poets, Dave Densmore, who's partnered with Alexa Wiley and done some benefits for CRK. Again, realizing the value in all the work that's done. So,
yeah, Dave Densmore's, you know, been one of the stalwarts of Fisher Poets for a long time. Just an incredible guy, and I learned so much from when I talk to him. I always try to pop out and see him on his boat when I get down to Astoria, and he's been really generous with his time and his poems too. He's written some poems for different occasions and different issues, and you know, he has a lot of wisdom built up and a lot of miles.
Yeah. And I think it works together too, though, because I bet Dave would say he's learned a lot from coming from the commercial fishing point of view. He's learned a lot to become this incredible environmentalist, you know, and it's very exciting to have it all come together. So.
Yeah, yeah, I think people approach this caring about their home in from different ways, you know, whether it's we need to protect this resource because this is what I rely on for my livelihood, or whether, you know, just something that struck someone. But I think protecting the environment and clean water is all about sense of place, and it's all about, you know, understanding and being inspired by you know, where you are in your home. And that's a great connection to the arts too, because you know, arts are the thing that inspires us and helps us understand. And so it's, you know, I would get bored just working with one kind of school of thought about something. So approaching it from all different sides, from the science and the art and, you know, the people who are out working every day to catch fish.
It's a full circle. It's a full community. So Brett is going to be presenting tomorrow morning at the Columbia River Maritime Museum, Protecting the Columbia from Fossil Fuel Export. And I think, is that 10 in the morning?
Yep.
Yeah. And you do need a button. And then in the afternoon at Kala is just, and that's right on Marine Drive between 11th and 10th, one of the many venues. Oh, my Lord, the whole town seems to be involved. I just love it. is just a gathering where you'll have the opportunity to visit and meet some of these folks who make a difference. So
yeah, and please come by and say hi. I would love to, you know, the like Corey who was just on.
Yeah,
sounds like someone I would love to talk to.
Right.
And some of the poets and photographers and, you know, anyone in the region or visiting would love to say hi.
Yeah, this is an opportunity for people to come together, meet each other, and then the friendships and the relationships go way beyond. So it's a great opportunity. Well, thanks so much for being here for the weekend for you, Brett, and for everybody from Columbia River Keeper who has made it to the estuary. So I hope you guys all have a good time as well as sharing your expertise. So
thank you. We will. And thanks for Coast Community Radio. We tuned it in as soon as we got over the hill, coming down the hill.
All right. Yes. Yeah. Well, it was a great show this morning. Albert had a wonderful time with them. And then again, folks, don't forget that the tonight from 6 to 10 and Saturday from 5 to 10, Coast Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the Astoria Event Center. And that's always fun for everybody because, including the performers, because they can listen in to their buddies when they can't necessarily be somewhere. So check it out. Okay, Brett, well, we'll see you very soon. Have a good time.
All right,
thanks.
Thank you.
All right. And again, folks, get your guides. You can see when this is happening. Brett's going to be talking tomorrow morning. It's 10 o'clock. Well worth hearing and learning about. And you can connect with a lot of locals as well. Got some music from one of our old-time favorites. We're really glad she's back this year. Here's Mo Bowstern right here on Coast Community Radio, folks.
In 1995, I had a job as the skiff operator on the boat called the Kestrel, a cute little Hansen, 44-footer. Really liked working on that boat. I worked with a woman named Brenda Susan Murphy and a guy named Jim. And Jim was a tough guy to work with. We called him Dim. He never seemed to remember anything, and he always thought he was in charge. Didn't really work well with women. He was one of those guys that has the knack of making it look like he did all the work. And if you're the guy working with him, you know that you're the one doing all the work, and he's just grabbing the shovel and working whenever the boss seems to come around. So he kind of had that gift of slanting it so that it looked like Brenda was lazy and he was doing all the work. The skipper started kind of giving Brenda some grief, and I tried to explain to him that she was the one that was doing all the cooking and the working and the cleaning up the boat and making sure the net went off okay. And Jim was doing a whole lot of sitting on piles of line. So I couldn't convince the skipper, and Brenda's morale was plummeting, so I wrote this song, and it really helped her out a lot. And every time she started looking blue, I would just sing it to her, and she'd perk right up. Brenda Susan Murphy, you are my galley queen. Hot biscuits from Hawk Point to town, and all capes in between. They say boat cooks are grumpy, but not my Brenda Sue. She is the sweetest boat cook to sail the ocean blue. They say the quickest way to someone's heart is through their gut. I never did believe it, thought my life was not that rut. And then Miss Brenda Susan came to bang those pots around. She cooked me up a meal so good, about ran that boat aground. Brenda Susan Murphy, you are my galley queen. She tosses me the coffee when she sees I'm getting mean. They say boat cooks are grumpy, but not my Brenda Sue. She is the sweetest boat cook to sail the ocean blue. It's good square meals three times a day. Day and coffee in between, and cakes and pies and tater fries keep us from getting lean. At night she brings us ice cream off the tender boats and gives a little smile as she makes us root beer floats. Brenda Susan Murphy, you are my galley queen. She keeps the cleanest galley the skiff woman's ever seen. And when she brings my lunch bag, my heart just pounds and pounds. Oh, Brenda Susan Murphy, you're the best cook on the grounds. She started out a greenhorn and she does the best she can. She isn't just a great boat cook, she is a fine deckhand. She'll bring that net in by herself, no help from anyone. And in between the sets, we talk and laugh and have some fun. one. Brenda Susan Murphy, you are my galley queen. Hot biscuits from Hawk Point to town and all capes in between. They say boat cooks are grumpy, but not my Brenda Sue. She is the sweetest boat cook to sail the ocean blue.
Oh, that Mo Bowstern, she is something else, and we are so glad she's back. We missed her last year. And I have two new guests here in the studio with me. Actually, one of them is getting to be a regular here on Coast Community Radio. She was on in the past, and she was on last night, and that would be Emily Springer. Hi, Emily. Oh, how about I turn your mic on? That always helps. There you go. So you were here last night reading bedtime stories on our regular Sunday through Thursday feature. Have you read children's stories on the air before?
No, not on the air.
I was thinking because not that many radio stations feature children's programming, but...
Yeah, when I was looking for my stories to try to decide what to bring, I had my kids go through all of my fish books at home and pick some out, and then I chose from those ones.
That's great. I love it. That's a good way to do it. And it was delightful. So you can come back anytime. It's just a short hop from, you're from Homer, Alaska, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Is that where you're from, or is that where you live?
It's actually where I'm from.
You grew up in Homer?
Yeah.
Well, I might have seen you there many years ago when I was tromping around Homer just for fun.
I kind of remember talking to you about that at some point. Yeah. But yeah, I did. I've always lived in Homer. Well, I mean, I've had some years off, but have been there quite a while.
And your official title is Fisher and Anthropologist. And I will come back to you. I want to introduce my second guest, and I believe this is Brittany's first time on Coast Community Radio. Is that true?
It is, yeah.
Okay. Have you been on the radio before?
I have been on the radio before.
Okay, but not here.
But not here.
So you're a KMUN virgin, but not a radio virgin. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Brittany Rutherford is here from Craig, Alaska. So these are our Alaskan women, and she's bringing a photo essay, which I checked out, and as I wrote to you in my email, I'm glad that this is an afternoon show. That's a pretty scary story that you are sharing with us. So tell me who you are, though. You're a storyteller and a researcher.
Yeah, I have a mixed background. All my degrees are in history, but I've worked as a journalist and as an anthropologist, so I do a lot of mixed methods in my research. And I consider myself to be a storyteller and a researcher, and I've been investigating this murder case and trying to understand the human side of it, really.
The human side meaning investigating or figuring out about the people involved?
Yeah, trying to get a better understanding of what kind of long-term impacts this sort of trauma has on not just the individuals who were, you know, lost their relatives and things like that, but also the communities where it happened and where the trials of the person who was arrested.
Okay, the name of the photo essay is Lost at Sea, Remembering the Victims of the FV Investor Murders. What FV stands for?
Fishing vessel
investor murders. And that happened in 1982.
It did.
And it's still unsolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one individual arrested, tried actually two times and acquitted. But the case has always been considered closed essentially since then. So unsolved.
And there are eight people who lost their lives, including two children, family.
Including two children and then a woman who was pregnant.
Oh, wow. Is that an unusual? It sounds, when I read this, I had never heard anything about it, and I was shocked, actually. Is that as unusual as I thought, or is it just because it's unsolved that it's so special?
I think it's unusual for a lot of reasons, but I mean, back in the early 80s, that was, we didn't really see quite as many of the mass shootings that we do today.
Right.
So it really was something right. that stood out. And it stood out to me, I think, after all of these years, in part because it seems like a story that's been lost between the cracks. A lot of people, surprisingly, haven't heard of it, and they are surprised when they do learn of it because people wonder why it was that it just sort of dropped off everyone's radar.
Yeah, yeah. Going back a little bit, you are from Craig, Alaska. Again, same question as for Emily. Are you from there, or do you live there, or what's your background?
I grew up in Colorado, but I moved to Alaska about 10 years ago, and I've spent most of my time in Alaska, actually, in Fairbanks. And Craig is sort of my base right now because it's where the murders happened mm-hmm. and it's where I've relocated to be able to do research.
How do people in the community relate to you?
Well, Craig is a really wonderful community. Of course, people have very different ideas about what could have happened. And so some people, of course, are really interested in the idea that this is being reopened and they've been very thankful. Mm-hmm. And then other people... have been more cautious and more skeptical. I think the idea that something so terrible happened in their town is something that has been very personal and hard for a lot of people to cope with.
And perhaps they don't want it to come back up again, or what?
Yeah, I think for some people, when the way that they deal with difficult things is by not talking about them.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever go out on the water?
Well, I was lucky enough to work on a fishing boat in Bristol Bay for a season.
Okay. We got to get your credentials here, you know. So, and that's my guest, Brittany Rutherford. And you are going to give a presentation at the Gear Shack tomorrow?
I won't be giving a presentation. I will be there from 2 to 3 p.m., and just happy to answer any questions that people have. And I'm doing a reading this evening at Kala Gallery and then reading tomorrow evening at the Astoria Event Center.
Oh, okay. So you'll actually be on the radio big time tomorrow evening because we broadcast from the Event Center. So is there someplace that people are going to be able to see the photo essay, or are you talking about it?
The photo essay is up at the Gear Shack,
okay.
and it will be up until Fisher Poets Gathering is over.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. So it's on the walls, and people will walk in and perhaps not know what it is, but they can find out from you. Tomorrow, 2 to 3 at the Gear Shack, but tonight at Gala, do you know what time?
It's 6 o'clock.
Okay, that's Friday, and then Saturday at the Event Center. Okay. Excellent. Had you been to Astoria before?
No, this is my first time.
Well, welcome. All right.
Thank you.
You
it's
like
nice
what
to
you
be
see?
Here. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Emily, back to you, because I know you have been to Astoria several times with the Fisher Poets. Is that what brought you here originally, or had you been familiar
yeah.
with it?
No, I mean, I'm relatively familiar with Oregon, but I have never lived anywhere in the state. And yeah, I guess the Fisher Poets basically is what brought me here to Astoria.
Okay, but this year you're doing something special, as I say, since we're a station that really, it's a community radio station. We take that quite seriously, including all ages, including children. And so you have put together the first ever Fisher Kids event. It's happening Saturday, 12:30 to 2 at Baked Alaska. Who is this for? What age? And what's going to be?
Well, originally I wanted to have an event or have a way for younger people, and I guess I was thinking of my own kids' ages, so they're 7 and 5 now, to express their experiences out on the water, on the beaches, being around fish, and having a spot that had kid-friendly reading material. Mm-hmm. A lot of the evening locations don't always have, I mean, the stories are great, but sometimes it's not great for young kids. So that was what I was originally thinking. As it turned out, the kids did not come down. But
I see. You thought they'd be your seed.
Yeah, but I still wanted to put the piece together, mm-hmm. or the show together. So there's kind of two parts to it. One part will be, what is anthropology in the context of commercial fishing, but kind of downsized to a younger audience. I think the age ranges, I've tried to put some stuff together that will fit all age ranges, starting from about, I don't know, 5, but certainly younger kids are welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if high school may be a little too old, but I have 2 sections to it. One of them is related to the salmon industry in Alaska, what is going on there with it, sort of the environmental perspectives of it, all across the state, really, and just looking at salmon life cycle and where salmon live and salmon habitat and things like that. And then the other part is anthropology and interviewing and questioning and trying to get the folk stories and life stories of fishermen of all ages and what it's like to be a kid out on the boat, out on the water.
And what is it like for your kids when they're out on the boat with you? What do they tell you that made you think it would be cool for others?
Well, I think just the way that they express themselves, you know, they don't see what's going on the boat nearly the same way. The first thing that comes to mind is how often they're looking for white sheep and not wanting daddy to drive the boat into the white sheep because that means storm and puking overboard.
What is white sheep?
The white sheep for like stormy weather, rough water, white caps on the waves.
You call them white sheep?
That's what the kids call them.
Oh, wow. Okay. We just got an education, right? Did
no,
you know that?
No, I never
they did. Could just be what we call them, but they've got their eyes out for the white sheep, and they don't want it anywhere near the
boat. That's great.
But I don't know, just what it's like to be out there when you're that age and to, you know, be sleeping in the galley, on the mm-hmm. galley table, essentially, going out to the beach in Prince William Sound, and we're constantly looking for fairy habitat and where the fairies all live.
I love it. That's
Daddy's
great.
Daddy's out on the boat, and we can just be walking around on the beach. And
lovely.
Yeah.
So the kids are feel that they're part of the whole thing.
Kind of.
The whole experience.
I mean, when they're out there, I think I would be more likely to be getting off the boat with them, and they're not really nearly as involved with equipment or mechanics
right,
or machinery.
Right,
but.
Right. But feeling-wise,
yeah.
It's a family affair as opposed to daddy goes off to the office to work.
Well, I like to be out there, so it's nice that they're old enough to come out with
absolutely,
us now.
Absolutely. Now, is that are you doing anything anywhere else this weekend?
Let's see. I am – tonight I'm at the Voodoo Room at 6.
Okay.
And then tomorrow at Kala.
What time is that?
Tomorrow's at 8 p.m.
Okay.
But I've got a lot of friends, well, a group of friends here from Homer, too, and I'm looking forward to seeing them perform and read at
Great.
The events also.
Great. I'm so glad to hear this because I actually called our good friend Michael McCusker today to tell him on his show, he said that these days there are so many tourists coming to Fisher Poets Gathering that the Fisher folks don't have a chance to get together and hang out. And I called him today and I said, Michael, I just want you to know that you should be here because you're wrong. Everybody is hanging out. They're having a wonderful time. They're enjoying seeing each other. I witness it on the street. People go, whoa. People even say it to me, even though I'm not a fisher. I just live here. Fortunately, so that's terrific. Okay, folks, Emily Springer, Fisher Kids, and Voodoo tonight, and Kala tomorrow night. Brittany Rutherford with her Lost at Sea, Remembering the Victims, and that is at the Gear Shack. And the Gear Shack is 1254 Commercial. I think that's the right address, right on Commercial. And everybody is welcome to go in there. There are books, there's music, all kinds of things for sale as well. And we hope to see you taking part in this festival. Right now, I'll say goodbye to my guests, Emily and Brittany. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you later. and I'm going to share with you some music from Lauren Sheehan, because she's performing tonight, 7 p.m. at the Cannon Beach History Center. And she is, well, I'll let her sing and you have a listen and figure it out for yourself.
So I went to the gypsy woman to get my fortune told. I went to that gypsy woman to get my fortune told. She took one look at me. She said, girl, doggone your hard luck soul.
Oh, dear. The gypsy woman, hard luck soul. Folks, don't forget the yoga festival is going on in Cannon Beach, the Seaside Jazz Festival in Seaside, and the Lohanahalem Community Trust behind the Emerald Curtain. Astor Street Opry Company opens tonight with their teen musical Tale of Beauty and the Beast. It's going for 2 weekends. And Seaside High School Musical, Urine Town. It's a satire. Good luck. Tomorrow, Troll Radio, don't miss it. It's at the Event Center from 11 to noon, so you can listen in as well on the radio as you can every month. Adam Bamer is going to be, or Bomer, is going to be at the Southwester tomorrow evening. He's also going to be on Crossroads.